At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our 5th season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
You normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Okay, here we are. We've got Zach Seddon, Tokyo Olympian, 5th fastest Brit of all time, 8:15 over the steeple a couple of weeks ago. Welcome back, mate. You have not been on for, I think, like 5 years. You're episode 6. So how are you doing?
Yeah, I know. It's been a while. I mean, yeah, I was thinking of just been for everyone else, have you?
Well, we've been waiting for you to run good again, to be fair.
Mate, I've been waiting as well, to be honest. Yeah, no, it's been nice. Been a long 5 years. A lot's changed, but yeah, it's been a while. But it's nice to get finally a quick race done. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Look, for me, and I'm sure for everyone who's kind of followed your career, you've almost got like 4 key stages as an elite, in that you had your FSU period, you then kind of came home being coached by your dad Jeff, obviously made Tokyo Olympics during that time, then moved to Jeff Wyman, and now you're in kind of that 4th and potentially final period, right, of that career, where for the last year or so you've been self-coaching. So we want to focus on that, really, that kind of last year or so. But can we start with like the decision of going self-coach, getting a full-time job, and I guess leaving the life of a full-time athlete behind that you've done for almost 10 years, right?
Yeah, mate. I don't know. To be honest, I didn't think this would be a stage, really, certainly this year. Mm. So like after last year, I was just pretty tired. I'd tried loads to go to the Olympics in Paris and didn't quite make it. And then I was just kind of over it all. I wouldn't say over it all, but I was just so tired, like mentally, after being going professional since 2024. So yeah, like 7 years, mate. So it started to wear on me a bit, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna finish. I would like to. I was getting old. I thought like 30, so I was like, oh, I'd just like to have something set up and then do. And then in the summer, I just pretty much after British champs last year, went for the time. I didn't get it. And I think, yeah, and then I was just done. I just had a load of time off, but went and bought a mountain bike. And then just we moved house, and then I started work, which I actually love my work. But yeah, and then I just thought, oh, I'm going to do some running by myself, just see what I like to do. And surprisingly had a really good run at Mansfield. And then that's when I decided, okay, you know, if I just keep doing what I'm doing, then I'll see what I can do on the track. But yeah, it's been the easiest. This is what worries me. It's been the easiest year of running, really. So I don't know whether all of the years before are just paying off when I've had a bit of a down year, or whether the training I'm doing is right. So I suppose next year will tell. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there part of you that is a bit worried by that in a way, in that like you had 7 years as a pro, 4 years at great NCAA university before that, and that potentially that training wasn't right for you?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you can say it wasn't right for you, because I just think that is just not a good way to look at things. Mm. Or like look back. Like it's not even really worth the conversation. But I do remember like jogging laps on a warm down of a session this year with my friends, and we were talking about it and stuff. And I didn't expect to honestly to come out in PB this year. So I remember saying something like, I think I've probably run as fast as I'll end my career or something on an 8:20. I said, real shame, really. So I don't think that was anywhere near my potential. And then they sort of just said, well, that's every athlete. And I was like, yeah, to be fair. So yeah, I just don't look back. But I was lucky enough to do what I did already, and I already had some good runs. So yeah, it's been a great career. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And look, I guess one of the biggest things in terms of that change was Paris, right? And can you talk just a bit more around like the impact that missing out on an Olympics has? And I guess that it's not just the moment missing out, it's the 4 years since, or 3 years, obviously because of COVID, since the Olympics before, but still being one of the best in the country, still being one of the best in the nation, but not being able to go because the times have just gone so crazy.
Yeah, I think what I was quite salty about, not salty, but like got quite caught up on, was the fact like, well, the two things, it suddenly became so much harder to qualify without like really good races. As before, like if you were good enough or you could run fast early, then just kind of go back, chill, train, and then come back out for the champs. But then I pretty much went 3 years, I think, just literally start my season in May and then trying to just chase the time. And it was like knowing that we had to get a time that was like pretty quick. I think it's changed a bit now, but I think I remember 1 year they had the 8:15 or whatever.
Yeah.
And unless, I think there was maybe one or two people that hadn't run the time that qualified on time in the Diamond League or something. So it's basically like getting a Diamond League, run quick, and you know, otherwise you're probably not going to get the time. You're going to have to rely on points, which was then like another big discussion. But yeah, I think when you come out every season trying to get the time for like 3 or 4 months, you just grow real tired. And I think that was the biggest problem year after year of like disappointment. Because you could have a good run, not get the time, and it would just be a disappointment. And that, I think, was the hardest thing.
And things, yeah, you're picking up British champs medals, things like that. I think what Jeff Wyman said on commentary.
Yeah, but they just didn't matter.
That's what I mean, yeah. So you've got 10 British champs medals now. But a lot of them, and I hope like now or at least in kind of 5-10 years, you'll look back and be proud of those. But like obviously having kind of like known you like over that period, I feel like, yeah, like you say, they didn't feel like an achievement because you're getting a British champs medal and then missing out because you've not run quick early in the season.
Yeah, pretty much, like I say, I don't know. I'm always, it's kind of a person I kind of am as well, is like after I do something, I'm always like thinking, okay, like on to the next. And like I'd kind of won British champs twice before, so like then I don't know, it's just, it sounds bad, but like the challenge just didn't really excite me anymore either. I mean, I can't remember going to British champs, and except this year, to be fair, it was all right, but like I just never really got that excited for them. Yeah, it was just like, because you're always looking at just Worlds or Olympics, and it's just so much pressure, I think. So, yeah.
And this year then, obviously, like you just said, you enjoy British champs, no pressure almost. When did you kind of start to think, obviously you mentioned Mansfield, that, look, I'm gonna have a bit of a crack on the track here, and how fast did you think you would go?
Yeah, so I ran well at Mansfield, and then I was like, oh yeah, I remember we was in the car, we're going for like party afterwards, Mansfield, or it was and we was going through the times, like the results, the split times went out. So then like we were just calculating the like from the legs, it said leg one this time. So you had to calculate your time, and I was with one of our teammates and we calculated my time, and I was like, what? I was like, no, I have to recalculate. Like, it wasn't horrendously quick, but from the training stuff I've been doing, I was expecting like a minute slower probably. So yeah, I was quite surprised. And then, because the training was pretty smooth into that. But then I got injured in January. So then I was out, I think. And then again, I was like, oh, maybe I'll just stop. So I didn't do anything for 6 weeks. And then it was, must have been about March or April time. My agent called me. I thought I was just getting back into it. And he was like, oh, do you want to do Parvenirmi? And I was like, oh, sorry. But like, I just love that meet. Mm. Like, if it, probably any other, I said, oh, mate, to be honest, if it's any other race, probably no, but I would love to do that. And it was a week after our daughter was born. So it's like close timing as well. So I was like, but yeah, I would do it. So it was once I was entered into that, I was kind of focused on trying to perform at Parvenirmi. I was hoping to go there and not get beat by too much. I was thinking, okay, we can run like 8:30 here and I will finish like middle to back of the pack, but like I won't get smashed. Mm. And then he showed me the, I saw the start list like a couple weeks out, and oh boy, yeah, I was like, geez, what have I let myself in for? So yeah, I had to do some speed sessions to get ready.
Yeah. And then it went all right. And like you say, obviously you had your daughter. And is dad strength a real thing?
Yeah, it went all right. I was still last or second last, but I ran 8:25. Yeah, I was just pretty, I don't know if dad's strength is a thing. It just seems, just go on about your business. I think there's always, yeah, I don't know really. I haven't really felt stronger, but I've obviously run all right. So yeah, it's all right. It's nice just knowing that you just come home and there's just like your family's going to be at home. Kind of, it takes a bit of pressure off the athletics, but like that was off anyway. It definitely has its positives and negatives. You know what I mean? So, yeah. But having a baby then becomes a bit harder to train and work around, but like, it's not impossible. Not at all.
Yeah. And do you find that if you do miss a session, cut a run short, whatever it is, you feel like you have an actual excuse now? Whereas I guess as a professional athlete, there's no excuse to miss anything. So if you do, the end of the world.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But I would say that more comes under coaching myself.
Mm.
So when I decide on what I'm doing, I sort of take all this into account, like what I'm going to be able to do and stuff. And like I know kind of where I can and can't run. So it's not really been missing anything. Yeah, it's been, and like I don't think I've written down any except the texts I send to my training partners, like what session I'm going to be doing like in the next few days. But yeah, I haven't written any program down or anything. I pretty much just do the same thing every week, and that's like helped a lot, I think.
Wow. Let's talk through that then. I guess let's talk through a typical week's training, but also can we talk through maybe the differences between that and then what you had before? So obviously your dad, Jeff Seddon, and then Jeff Whiteman, both like quite high, like speed training with fairly low mileage. And probably the biggest thing as well, from what I understand you're doing now anyway, is I guess the session volume is quite low with those guys compared to what you're doing now.
Yeah. So I do my training when I started back, it was kind of like, okay, I'm just going to do whatever I want to do. So I took out all the things I didn't really like, which was S&C. Mm-hmm. I didn't like that. So I didn't do that. I took out evening runs by myself because like that just gets pretty bleak. Like I'd rather do extra miles in the morning with someone or just even by myself in the morning than do an evening run. So the only time I double is for the sessions, and they're both in the evening now. And then, yeah, I took out anything that was too like hard on the track. I always felt for the past few years, and it's just different coaching styles, but all the sessions we did they never really had like guide pace times, or if they did, it would be at the start and then you do a 400, see how quick you could go, or at this. I just sort of did every session I do pretty much is the same rep distance for the whole workout. Usually it's just always the same 20 by 400 or 8 by a K or 10 by a K. or, you know, 6 or 7 by 800. All recovery stays the same. All the pace stays the same. And that's what I felt like I enjoyed doing. And I had to make everything easy to do by myself, because that's how I started, just doing it by myself. So yeah, normal week. You still want me to go through that?
Yeah, let's go Monday to Sunday. Well, if you start on a Monday, that is. You don't start on a Sunday.
No one has listened to me this much about my training in about a year. Yeah, usually people are bored by now. Certainly Jess. Yeah, she's usually switched off. No, Monday I will wake up and I'll do a run probably. So all my morning runs are pretty much done at like out the door at about 6 a.m. usually. Mm-hmm. So I'll just wake up and do 7 or 8 miles on a Monday at 6 a.m. and then that's it for the day. Then I'll go to work, get into work for 8. Any really. Say when I run, I've got a mate that lives a mile down the road. So when I run with him, it's usually average about 7 minute miling. If I go by myself, it usually goes to about 6:40s, somewhere in that region. So that's Monday. That's all I do, just that morning run, which is so nice because by 8 a.m. I've resting now until Tuesday. Tuesday, wake up, and these are the key days, the Tuesday and the Friday. Tuesday, I wake up, same thing, 6 a.m. I'll be out the door. And I would, in peak training, when I was doing 70 mile a week, I would be doing 8 miles probably on Tuesday morning, and then come back, go to work, and then on Tuesday evening, then I'd do a big track session. So 20 by 400 off 30 seconds recovery, something like that, or 10 by K6. I don't know if we ever did 8 by a mile. I think we usually got, maybe we did do 8 by a mile. Yeah, 8 by a mile sometimes. Yeah, so always that. And then the sessions are usually very achievable, but they got quicker throughout the year. But yeah, always set achievable. So I think when we do 20 by 400, 66, usually off 30 seconds and you feel okay. But that started out at like 71, 72. Yeah, and then go home, obviously.
Sorry, mate, is that in like carbons, in spikes, you wearing trainers? What are you doing those sessions?
Carbons, it would be carbons usually for that. Some of the sessions, say we do 20 by 400 off a minute, mm-hmm. then they'll be a bit quicker. That'll be spikes. And then, yeah, if we were to do, I think we've done like 20 by 300 coming into the spring off like 100 jog. That was in spikes. Yeah, I haven't really... And then there were sometimes I just wanted to wear spikes because it just felt a bit nicer. So, yeah. But spikes or carbons, it doesn't matter. I wouldn't do it not in carbons or spikes because then that would be tough. Yes. Yeah, I would feel sorry for you if you did that. And then Wednesday would be a rest day. So nothing on a Wednesday. Thursday, again, would be a morning run with my mate, like 7 minute miling, 6 a.m. And then that's it. Friday would be the same as Tuesday, morning run, evening session. So usually if we've gone 400s on Tuesday, we do Ks or miles Friday or the other way around. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's on feel. Like if we start to get too tired, then I'll just do like kind of easier miles or Ks. Saturday, I will do anything I need to do to make my mile to 70, my week to 70 miles. Yeah. So like I know I'm going to do a 15 on Sunday because I do that every week.
Yeah.
And then Saturday could be between 3 miles and 7-10 miles maybe if it's been a bad week. So yeah, that is so nice. When you get to Saturday and you only need 3 miles to make it 70, boy.
Yeah.
That is so nice. But
and
yeah.
That's better than doing that on Sunday, right? That's better than getting to Sunday and then having to top it up. So you might, yeah, not having to end up doing 18s and 20s.
No, yeah. Again, I just found that, like, I don't know, I just really found I just want to do anything that, like, either one, I want to do mentally, so if I don't enjoy it, I figure I ain't going to do it. And then two, like, I have to be able to handle it. If I started doing 18 milers, I would just get too tired and my back gets, like, sore. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then that Sunday run, what's the pace of that? Because I know you used to kind of lash a lot of your runs, right? You run pretty quick. Like to me, and now 6:40s for an easy run is sounded pretty slow for when I've run with you anyway.
Yeah, that again will be probably average about 6:40s throughout the year. There are some that'll be 6:30s, some that'll be 6:50s, but usually starts at 7 just outside, and then by sort of 2 or 3 miles in, you're at 6:40, and there'll be some quicker miles. But yeah, it's just kind of just easy again.
Yeah.
Again. That's what's worrying, mate. Everything was quite easy. So, don't know.
Yeah, we'll and I think obviously, like you say in there, it's like it's fairly easy. It's really simple. It's the same thing. But I think what's more, I guess, strange in a way for a lot of people is that you've done that from when, like January or just after you got injured in January to now, and you've not really changed at all. Or have you changed it at all?
No, I did. We started to do more track sessions, obviously, because then you do 20 by 400 off a minute. The only session that I think that changed, I watched YouTube and I watched Jakob on YouTube, and he did, I didn't really like this session, but it's when you do the 6-4s and then 6-3s.
Yeah.
I just did that off 2 minutes. That wasn't, because like I said, I like to do the same rep. So we had to change there, which is a bit annoying, but it's good enough for Jakob. So we did stuff like that. And then some 200s. And then I had to do a couple of steeple sessions. But that's another thing. I didn't really bother with hurdling and stuff this year. I just didn't really feel like it was as important at the time of my running. I don't know. Yeah. So did a couple of like 800 sessions, which I had originally planned to do Ks, and then I sort of just thought, no, I'll do eights. A key one, I think, was we used to do 6x8 off 3 minutes. What? No, 8x800 off 3 minutes.
Okay.
And that would be at like sort of 3K, 5K pace, getting quicker.
Yeah.
Not purposefully, but the last rep is always quicker. Always. Yeah.
Is that flat out last rep or those days
nah,
ago?
Not flat. I haven't done any session flat out this year.
Yeah.
I remember Matty came down and he was pacing it one week. I was like, knew I was in all right shape because I started to, he was like pacing and I was kind of egging him on a bit, saying, go on, go quicker, go quicker. As long as it's quick enough.
Yeah. Okay. And I think for me as well, one of the interesting things here, you're not writing this down and planning out the next 6 months, right? You're not even planning out the next 4 weeks and writing that down. At what point you decide in these sessions, and then we'll talk about the group in a bit, but and then like sending that out. Like how late is it that you're thinking, okay, it's gonna be K's tonight or it's gonna be miles? You know what I mean? Like when are you deciding that?
Yeah, probably anywhere between like the day of and the session out, really. So a couple sessions out, because you think, okay, like if I think yesterday is Monday, I think, okay, Tuesday I want to do fours and then Ks on a weekend. So it'll be like that, really. Yeah, I think the good thing is that we haven't got a load of sessions that we've been doing to choose from. So and one of my things when I started back, because after the summer and stuff, I was by myself. I honestly feel like I'd done every session under the sun. I'd gone K, 8, 6, 4, 4, just every rep, every session, every jog, every copy. I've done it. I feel like because I've been running for so long, I literally done them all.
Mm.
And I was like, I literally just couldn't be bothered to think of a weird, wonderful session just for the sake of it. I thought, what do I want to improve? Okay, that's my endurance, probably. And then what's the easiest way to do that? And then just do the same thing. Yeah. But that's because I'm a bit older, mate. When I was younger, I used to like it when we do different reps and different recoveries. Yeah. And yeah, but I just, and if it works, and then that's the thing, I just always thought, like you say about make change, write down, I always thought it will come, but I will just wait until I plateaued in the season. I was like, okay, if I have a couple of weeks and I'm getting stuck and then, you know, form dips a bit, then I'll try and change something. But never really came, so I just didn't bother changing anything, just kept doing what I was doing.
Yeah. And are you still running in Swinley, and so it's like quite hilly for all of your runs, or is it just on a Sunday?
Yeah. Mate, it was, we were doing that a little bit because my mate that lives down the road, we can run from my house.
Okay.
And then like I think it got to a point one day when we were just like, mate, like I can't face going in up them hills again. So I do a lot of running around. There's a lake near mine as well. So we go down there. So, yeah. Yeah. It's probably a mix. It's not that hilly, but it's hilly enough where I live.
And again, I guess just that mentality difference to thinking, like, you're running with your mate and you're like, well, that's too hard, so I don't want to do that, versus, look, a year, 2 years, 3 years ago, certainly, I think you'd be going to the forest to get to a hill and then to hurt yourself going up it and to make the run really hard.
Yeah, I think you just get so worried about things because you always want to be like the best, but in many ways, like, it's not, it's just that's what I think is the most toughest thing about the toughest thing about our sport is that, like, this is my opinion, I really don't think it's the person who trains the hardest that gets the best results. It's like, and there's not even any medals for training the hardest. So you've just got to be smart, and it's like just a consistently hard effort. But it was a bit sad, really, because in the summer, last summer, you kind of have to wave goodbye, or so I thought, to running quick, and you have to be okay with that. So I was like, look, I'm going to run, I'm going to enjoy it, but I can't really run 8:15, 8:10, whatever.
Yeah.
So, like, it's quite sad to think, right, well, I'm done with that then. But then you get over it, then I was okay with it, and then it kind of worked the other way. So shows what a mental game it is as well as physical.
Yeah.
I think being mentally, like, sound enables you to do the right physical things. Yeah,
absolutely. Talk about the group then, because you mentioned, like, right at the start, you were like, okay, well, I just don't want to think about it. I'm going to do something on my own, get rid of what I don't like. But now you've got a load of guys doing it with you. Do you coach them? Like, they're your training partners, but you're sending the sessions out. Are you the coach as well?
No, I was not the coach. Like, yeah, like, I started last year doing what I was doing, just being by myself. And then there's Dan Brocklin. I was doing a bit with him, a guy at local, right, in the winter. And then I got to Christmas, got injured in January. And then my main training partner from then on was Ben Bradley. So he kind of ran podium. And then he kind of, after podium, was just like, oh, man. Like, he was in a position I was in the summer. Like, oh, I'm done. So we both started back in about February time, kind of just working together. And that was the real catalyst, I think, because in... once you've got two, then more people think, oh, I'm just going to jump in a session. And then now we got, like, I don't know, we've done sessions where I've led, like, maybe two or three reps out of 16. It's unreal. Because everyone just comes down and plays their part. And then, yeah, I got my mate Bono, who's not professional. He comes down and he'll just do bits of the session. And yeah, it's just been a lot funner, mate. Really, really is. So... yeah, it's been nice. Like you say, I just kind of will text them doing what I'm doing. Sometimes they do different things, or sometimes they will say, oh, I want to do, like, miles tonight. And I think, well, yeah, that works with me. I don't really care. Yeah. So, yeah, it's been to have a social aspect, like, such a big social aspect. As when I was training with Jake, it was mostly just me and Jake, and then sometimes Ian. And then with my dad, obviously, there was Matty there sometimes, but not really a massive group. So yeah, it's been nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess one thing as well, the training's been much of the same. You said it's not really been that hard. The other thing, I had a look, and apart from 2020, the COVID year, this is the least amount of races you've done in a season on a track since you started the sport as an under 13 in 2006. Yeah, run your fastest ever time by 5 seconds. Like, what difference has racing less made?
Yeah, mate. Oh, I don't know. I probably, if I had my way, I might have even raced less. No, I couldn't have raced less, actually. So I did a couple of 15s. One of them was the one at Bracknell, which I always do. I think it was just, I was able to, I always knew I was at end my season. I think I entered Aldergham after I ran Parvenumi. My agent was like, because, mate, even in Parvenumi, I ran 25 and I was like, oh, okay. But, like, I had our daughter born the week before. So I was like, oh, like, maybe I could go a bit quicker. But my agent was like, look, mate, like, I seriously think from what I've seen, you can go quicker. Like, we need to find you a race. And I was like, all right, well, I'll do Aldergham. So then from those months, I knew that. And then I was able just to plan my season around that, which was basically, and I knew I'd do British Champs and then just a 1500 before that. And that was all I think I needed, I thought, to try and attack my PB in Aldergham. Like, I wasn't worried about improving my 15 time. I wasn't worried about getting a time for anything else or didn't feel obligated to race anywhere. So, yeah, I just did whatever was best for those races.
Yeah. And with that, I think as well, like since, I guess, yeah, since after finishing at FSU, I think you've been to altitude every year, apart from this one.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've got that, right? We said at the start, you've got all this training in the bank, you've got all these racing and experiences in the bank, but it must feel a bit weird, right? To have not gone away on a camp and made those sacrifices and you're flying.
Yeah, it's a couple things. I just feel like when you're full time, like you feel like you have to fill your day with stuff or fill your time and do these things. But no, it's like evidence back to evidence. I don't know, whatever it is. That altitude helps, like it works, doesn't it? So if you can go and do it correctly, you should go. But there's been so many years where I think I just maybe went and didn't do it correctly, or I was really flying after altitude. And then you come home and you haven't been to altitude for like a couple months. So you kind of lose that effect. I think just this year, not going, keeping everything exactly the same, I just pretty much knew what I was going to get in workouts and stuff like that. So there's advantages and disadvantages. Like, it's a very safe, controlled environment at your training from home at your house. So, you know, because I was in a position where I wasn't really taking big swings at anything, I wasn't really too concerned. I was quite happy not going to altitude. Maybe there was a year that I thought, right, I'm really going to try and just take a big swing, I would try and go to altitude. I think if you do anything correctly works, anything incorrectly doesn't work.
Yeah. Cool. And then how would you compare your 8:15 a couple of weeks ago in Belgium to running 8:21 in Rome in 2019? Because I was trying to think about probably like what your like other best races, right? Because obviously you're running quicker than that in between. But I think the 8:21 in Rome, that was pre-super spikes as well. And the sport was just kind of in a very different place in terms of like all the tech. And so I think they're probably, I'd say they're probably your two best performances anyway. You tell me if you disagree, but I'd sure be interesting for you to like talk about the two performances and maybe which one's better. Cause obviously one of them's faster on paper, right? But
yeah, feel like my best. Yeah. Rome, oh mate, was unreal. Like I got into the Diamond League in Rome, I think that year, off of coming fifth at Euros. So, and then had a rocky kind of winter. And I was just going into Rome and literally, mate, I just got on the back of that field and just hung on for like dear life. I had like a clean, smooth run. Like people went nicely ahead of you. Wasn't too busy back there. So you could see every hurdle, but yeah, you still had someone in front of you. That was just, and the laps were hideously even, I think. But it was a big breakthrough for me. But I'd say, like, you know those races where you kind of just get everything out of yourself? That was definitely one of those. Like, I remember I walked to the warm-up area afterwards and it's like a gorgeous like warm-up track and I was just spewing all over it. It's horrible. Yeah, like I was completely like done. So yeah, Rome was like, yeah, great. Like, one of the runs you'll always remember in your career. And then I think, but my best run was later that year, I ran 8:22 in the heats at Worlds.
Yeah.
Which was like...
You hit the front as well, that one? Yeah.
Yeah, I went to the front of that, like tried to push the pace a little bit. I mean, I weren't at the front for long, but tried it. Anyway, mate, like that was a lot. Yeah, I was on the BBC. But that like was a lot more up and down. So I think it was physically, I was in better shape there. And in this one in Belgium, mate, just I still can't wrap my head around it because it worries me as well that literally everyone in that race went fast. So you think of like usually if you go get PB and go fast, it's always nice to do it when not many other people do. But literally everyone was fine, man. So it's a quick track, obviously, and quick race. But as far as the race went, mate, because I wasn't very confident, I went off at the back. So like I was in this massive like bubble of people and everyone was like quite single file up front. They put 25 of us in there and it was just, yeah, I was up and down. I think I finished in like lane 3 or something. So I just ran so wide. I remember talking afterwards, I think actual 3K, I must have gone through, well sub 8:15 because of just running wide. As Rome, like, I went through 3K in 8:21, mate. Like, you know.
So
I certainly think there's a lot more there. I think there's more there after running 8:15 than there was running 8:21. But it's just also the fact that everyone ran PBs when I ran 8:15 is a bit like, you know, was there something just really special about the night rather than how I ran?
What do you mean by that special about the night? Just like the conditions, or do you mean like a bit of, I don't know, just one of them, magic night, if you like?
Yeah, it's just like you have those races, don't you? It's like, I mean, not the same at all, but like the men's Olympic final in the 800 in London, like everyone just ran quick. Like, you have it, you see it often in Diamond Leagues, like, or there was, wasn't there a 5K earlier this year or something? Like, you know, where literally the whole field, it just runs quick. And
George,
that's like
George Mills one where he ran the British record. That was cool.
Everyone is quick. So you look at the finish, PB, PB, PB. And like, there's obviously like, that is just a great race and great opportunity to be a part of. So there's like, that sometimes outweighs, you know, running wide, you know, getting caught and tripped and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. With that then, my understanding is you're not going to go chase a standard now. I know there's not many opportunities. Talk about that and I guess the lack of desire to do that and try and get a spot in Tokyo. Because there's 4 days left, is that right? And there is a meet this weekend.
They're going tomorrow, mate. They're all going
tomorrow,
to
Tokyo. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, to try and get a standard. Mate, it was never in my plan. And like, I've really enjoyed doing what I was doing. And I had the plan to run it Belgium. I thought that, like, I always thought maybe I had one good year left in me. So I just thought if I do that, if I go and chase a standard, I literally just fall back into what I've been doing for the past 4 years of like chasing times. And I'd rather just, you know, sort of rest up and then approach next year, because there's Euros and stuff next year. So hopefully I can qualify for that. Just to approach that like fresh and excited to go. I just thought, you know, I've given enough of my seasons and running career to chasing standards. And yeah, I just thought I was lucky to have as good a season as I, not lucky. I was happy coming into the season. I was happy with what I've done. So I'll leave the season happy with what I've done.
Yeah. Yeah. Mate, I think that's bang on. And look, so say you went to Tooting, ran 8:25. Do you think then the hunger for next year is then almost like back to where you were a year ago?
Yeah, it's just like you'd be questioning a lot more stuff. I mean, look, like it wouldn't really make a difference. You know how good you are, but I don't know, mate. It's just, yeah. But don't get me wrong. It is as well, like they are good meets BMC, but again, like going to Tooting, like if someone said to me, oh, like there's a steeple in Monaco, like after Belgium, they said, look, there's a steeple in Monaco in 3 weeks, the night before the cutoff, like, do you want to do it? I'd be like, yeah, go on then.
Do you think that should be like NCAA last chance meet, like open up Boston indoors in the summer or Monaco, whatever it is, and just let whoever is like within a certain percentage of the standard come and have a crack? Would that be cool?
Oh, mate, that was basically Ordegem in Belgium, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But it was like literally 2.5-3 weeks early. Yeah. It always baffled me because that was the problem. There's after champs, you've got a month until Worlds, yet there's so little competitions for people to get the standard. And like people, like look at all these guys going to Tooting. Like they're obviously desperate still either to try and make the standard or run quick. Like it's what you train all winter for. So yeah, it would be a lot easier to plan your season as well. Like that was the thing. Tooting only came up, I think, a few days after we'd run in Belgium. Yeah. Or something like that. Yeah, so I didn't even know it was a meet for steeple. They only put a steeple in there, that is. So I didn't even know it was going on, the steeple there. So yeah, they should. I feel like they... But then World Athletics will just set... You get more people do it, and then the standard will just get faster and faster. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know when it's going to stop, but hopefully soon.
Yeah, mate, I think they should just get rid of them, to be honest. I think they should make it, like, reasonable so we don't end up with people getting lapped, but, like, steeple, for example, like should be 8:30 like it used to be. And then nations should just have an allocation based off how well they've done previously.
Yeah.
And then based off the British champs or whatever nation it is just picks their best team based off their allocation.
Yeah. I think that was the thing though. It's like, this is what was annoying. Like, cause like going into Tokyo or before that, like we were qualifying or certainly could have qualified for Worlds and stuff. Yet like we knew we weren't going to be taken by British Athletics. Like even if we qualified, we'd have to do an even better qualifying.
Yeah.
Which that's a little bit disheartening. But yeah, I really liked it, like how they're doing at NCA. Like you qualify for regionals and in the top 12 from regionals go to nationals. Like imagine if like the top however many from Europe, like 15 or 16 from Europe go and you have to have like European qualifiers. That would be way better. But
yeah, I think that should go down to like qualifying for British champs though, personally. Like they talk about like the regional meets, like no one's going to England champs, no one's running their county champs, no one's doing the Southerns. But imagine like even yourself had to do well at the Southerns to then even get in the British champs race. The amount of like good domestic racing we'd have in this country for people to go out and watch would be so...
Oh yeah, mate, it would be class. And I think that as well, because certainly in the steeple, like I've seen years like where the numbers aren't as high just because there's like... I don't know, the standard's quite hard and then there's a lot of NCA guys that are too tired. But like, if you're actually qualifying for things, and even in the 15 and stuff, like if you're qualifying for things, I think you're much more likely to have fuller fields at the champs. But also I have a lot of feelings on champs. Like I think it should be first three past the post, that kind of thing, because that would make it so much more of an exciting meet.
Yeah, 100%, mate. Well, look, just before we get into a little bit of quickfire, going forward, what's the goal, mate? You mentioned Europeans, but are you still thinking about having a crack at World Cross in Tally?
Well, mate, I was thinking about having a crack at World Cross in Tallahassee, but the trial is when I'm away for Thanksgiving with Jess and the baby, which is like, she said I could do the trial, but I'm going to maybe try and race a few cross countries beforehand to see what shape I'm in. Cause I don't want to like miss that and stay at home by myself if I'm going to go to Liverpool and come like 30th. you know what I mean? Like I should know whether I'm within striking distance, but I would love to do World Cross on the home course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would be like the best thing of the career. So, well, close to. Yeah. And in Euros next year, I think. I really have a like dream of doing that now. So,
And that would be like two home champs, right? In terms of World Cross, where you went to college, and then Birmingham just down the road, really as well for Europeans.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I just think Euros is just such a good meet. You know, it's like, and now I mean, it's Europeans are so strong in all events, even distance. Like, it's not the weak event or. Distance isn't weak in Europe like it used to be.
No.
It's like if you're winning Euros, you're very, very good. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let's just a couple quick fires. And we've been asking most of our guests recently. Have you ever read something about yourself or heard something on a podcast maybe that you're like, that's just way off?
Not really. No. But no, I would never even read stuff really about myself. I don't really like doing that. No.
Sure. Do you have a favorite athlete on the circuit? Like, obviously, well, you've been watching Jakob's videos doing his sessions, but is there anyone you like, they do it the right way, or it's cool to follow their career, or even people you know personally, right?
Yeah, mate, I think Jakob's well good. Like, obviously Jake, it's like real good mate of mine, so he would be my favorite athlete on the circuit. There's a few people. Like, I just love watching the steeple, mate. Like, I think Albacali's class. He's pretty cool. Yeah. And then anyone that does the 10 major champs, what race? Yeah. Any 10K major champs runner.
Yeah. Love it. And then finally, if you could change one thing about running or the sport in general, what would it be?
If I could change one thing?
Yeah, anything. Like, you can, like, where's your oyster?
What? Could I pay, like, anyone that runs under 820 a million quid?
Yeah. There you go.
No, I think I would just make it like it should be a lot more I don't know. I would like to see weekly, like the Diamond League on every week, because I'll be like tomorrow, mate. I can't wait to watch it. Be decent.
Yeah. So like, well, almost what Grand Slam we're trying to do, but like on a massive scale, right?
Yeah, but I feel bad. But like Grand Slam was just, track is so good how it is, I think. I would get, if I could do anything, actually, I would get rid of the waiting times between events.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I would, yeah. That's, whoever does that, thank you. Yeah. But yeah, and then that's what I would do.
Yeah. And then the £1 million bonus for the sub 820. So
yeah, maybe, or sub, yeah. Or just if you run exactly on 815.6 or whatever.
Yeah.
10 mil. Yeah.
Or 10 British champs medals. That could be one as well.
Yeah. Jeff was saying about that. I was a bit like, wow, it doesn't really feel like it. I don't know. Yeah. Is that all in steeple?
Presume so.
I have one. I only have one indoor in the 3K. Yeah. So yeah,
it must all be mile one, row mile as well, I think.
Do I have, yeah. Yeah. Well, whatever. 10. Hopefully get some more.
Yeah.
I need another gold one. Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. So next year, World Crossing tally, gold at British Champs, Europeans.
Yeah. Well, I'd be too good, mate. Then I'll probably, have to retire. No.
Perfect.
Yeah, well, can't get it all done.
Zach, thanks so much for coming on the podcast again. Really appreciate it. And obviously, best of luck for your break and then the next season.
No worries, mate. No worries. Cheers, boy.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.